Again, we see that Paul begins a new section here, even from the words he uses, but certainly by the content. We talked at the beginning of chapter 8 that Paul said now, and kind of broke into a new section. That's how he starts chapter 10. Now, I, Paul, myself urge you by the meekness and gentleness of Christ, and then goes into his discussion in chapters 10 to 13. But certainly by the content, we see we're in a new section here. He's moved on from talking about the collection, and he's moving on to this defense of his apostleship. Made the comment in passing that we have seen several charges against Paul, either explicitly or implicitly, in the chapters thus far. So just quickly as a review before we get into the content of chapter 10, what are some of those things that Paul's responded to thus far in his letter? The charges against Paul, like I said, either stated explicitly or those that seem to be implied and we talked about as we went through. Yeah, waffling in his service, that he's unreliable, that he's fickle in his plans, that he's vacillating between yes and no, being inconsistent in that. That was in the context of his changing his travel plans, so we certainly saw that idea. Any other charges against Paul that we have noted thus far in our study? All right, I guess that's it. There's been other things that we've kind of noted throughout, but that's certainly the one that was most notable that we talked about, that's kind of going along in that vein of him being inconsistent. There was this idea that he planned according to fleshly or worldly motives that kind of went along with it. There was kind of the accusation that he was lacking in love or concern for Corinth, that he was domineering over them, and so he responds to that in one way or another. That there seemed to be an implied one that his suffering kind of discredited his ministry, that Paul suffers too much to be a minister, that these men are enduring too much, that we kind of talked about that parallel back to Job, that was kind of the accusation against Job, that if you're suffering, that must mean that there's some inadequacy in you. But we see Paul responds to that. That there were others, but those are kind of the main ones that we've talked about. But we're going to see several in chapters 10 through 13. Again, some of them are stated more explicitly than others, but we see this idea that there certainly were accusations against Paul. And so in chapter 10, we're going to see a few of those noted here in the text. And so let's get started in 2 Corinthians chapter 10. It says here, now I, Paul, myself, urge you by the meekness and gentleness of Christ, I who am meek when face to face with you, but bold towards you when absent, I ask that when I am present, I need not be bold with the confidence with which I propose to be courageous against some who regard us as if we walked according to the flesh. So I think in these two verses, we see kind of our first two of the charges against Paul. I think we see one in verse 1 and one in verse 2. But let's start with how he begins here. So he says, I, Paul, myself urge you by the meekness and gentleness of Christ. All throughout this letter, we've noted the times in which Paul would kind of go back and forth between I and we. He's going to do that in chapters 10 through 13. He's going to still make points about Silvanus and Timothy. But we see as he starts this that it seems to be more personal than the others, that Paul is taking this himself and responding to these things. And so he is the one that's urging. He's not just talking about the ministry that's shared with others here. He's talking about what he is doing, that he's urging them by the meekness and by the gentleness of Christ. What does he mean when he talks about the meekness and the gentleness of Christ? I believe he is in the latter part when he says meek face to face, but bold towards you and absent, talking about the charge. I think what he's talking about when he talks about the meekness and the gentleness of Christ is what he's saying, that he's not going to respond more harshly than is needed. He's going to respond in the way that Christ would. We see the meekness of Christ, that he deals calmly and compassionately with sinners. But when the the occasion demands it, Jesus did respond harshly, like when he was rebuking the Pharisees, the hypocrites, for the way in which they were deceiving people. And so he talks about that. But I think his point is that he's going to be fair and measured with those at Corinth. But that doesn't mean that he's going to turn away from rebuking those in sin. But I think the part where he kind of makes this, deals with the accusation against him, I who am meek when face to face with you, but bold towards you when absent. I think he's in part kind of playing on that dual meaning of meekness, right? The meekness of Christ isn't the idea of timidity. That's certainly not what is meant when we talk about Christ being meek. But I think when he says, I who am meek when face to face, that's the charge against him. That Paul, he's just timid. He's meek in that regard when he's face to face with you. But he sends these letters that are so bold and so strong because he's going to come back and talk about this very thing later in the chapter. Where they're going to talk about his letters versus his personal appearance. But here's the charge that he's meek when face to face, but bold when absent. That there's, again, that idea of this incongruity that's there, that he's different in his letters than he is in person. Remember a statement that he made in 1 Corinthians as it regarded to his demeanor when he would come and be with them? That was a very vague question. Keith might know what I'm talking about. Yeah, there's that idea, certainly, of it. We see in 1 Corinthians chapter 4, in verse 21, he talks about, what do you desire? Shall I come to you with a rod or with love and a spirit of gentleness? Where his idea there was he's written these things against Corinth, written these things against what they've done. He's called them out for their misplaced faith and these other things that he mentioned. And so he gives them the option. Can I come? Do I need to come with a rod? Do I need to come in discipline? Do I need to come and kind of beat you in that way? Or do I come with love and a spirit of gentleness? Now, that's not to say if he comes with a rod, it's not love. But the idea is that they can determine how Paul behaves when he comes to them based on what is necessary. And I think that's kind of the point that he's making here, that he's going to be in person whatever the occasion calls for. Paul's ready to act in that way. He's ready to be bold against them if needed. But he is kind of preparing them for that. And that's exactly what he says in verse 2. He says, I ask that when I'm present, I not be bold with the confidence with which I propose to be courageous against some who regard us as if we walked according to the flesh. So what's he saying here in verse 2? Well, one, there's another charge that we walk according to the flesh. But here he's saying, I ask that I don't, New American Standard's added need, but I think that's what he's talking about here. He doesn't want to come and be bold in that way, but he says, I'm ready to. Because there are those that make this charge. They regard us as if we walked according to the flesh. And he's going to make the point we're not doing that. And that he is prepared to respond to them. Any comments or questions about that? Yes, sir.
I mean, in verse 1, that word meek in the latter part.
Yeah.
If you have it in your margin, it says lowly.
Yeah.
It says literally lowly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've had classes where weakness doesn't necessarily mean timidity, like what we mentioned before. Mm-hmm. He's definitely contrasting the idea of the attitude in which they portray him in person versus the attitude in which he is going to have. So this
right. Yeah. 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 Yeah, and he's addressed that even in his letters, that he's going to acknowledge several times in here, they were strong because that's what the occasion called for. But even in that, Paul had written already in 2 Corinthians that his goal wasn't just to make Corinth sorrowful. Now, that was part of his goal. He wanted Corinth to repent. And so he sent that letter. And so certainly here, he's acknowledging these things again. Like you said, he's going to tie in this irony and this sarcasm throughout the discussion here. But he says, they regard us as if we walked according to the flesh. But what's his response to that? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so the accusation is, they regard us as if we walk according to the flesh. Now, that's different than what he says in verse 3. He says, for though we walk in the flesh, we do not war according to the flesh. And so the charge is that he walks according to the flesh, that he's kind of driven by that flesh. That's what's motivating him. That's what he's making decisions based on. But when he says in verse 3, we walk in the flesh, it's what he acknowledged in chapter 4 and verse 7. He said, God has given this treasure in earthen vessels. We're in the flesh. We're in a body. We suffer those things as men. But he says we don't war according to the flesh. What's this war that he's talking about? What's he mean we don't war according to the flesh? I'm sorry? Okay. Yeah, that fight as one would for an earthly kingdom. Certainly saying we're not doing that. What else? Yeah. 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 Yeah, you'll notice in all of these charges against Paul, they're not saying Paul is wrong, Paul's teaching error because this is what God said and that differs than what Paul said, or this is what this Old Testament passage says and this is what Paul says and that doesn't agree. What did they do? What were their attacks? Yeah, physical in nature. He's not a good speaker. He's nothing to look at. He's all of these things. And so he's saying, we're not going to war in that way. We're not going to make these personal attacks against them. But he says, the weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh. So they're not according to the flesh, not from the flesh, but they're divinely powerful. Right? He's talked all throughout about his ministry, that God's appointed them to this, that God's given them that, that he's speaking that message. He says, these weapons that we're using, they're not of the flesh, they're divinely powerful for the destruction of fortresses, destroying speculations and every lofty thing raised up against the knowledge of God. We're taking every thought captive to the obedience of Christ, and we are ready to punish all disobedience whenever your obedience is complete. And so he uses these words that would relate to physical warfare, like destruction and tearing down and taking captive. But he's using it in this spiritual way. And so this is one of those passages where, depending on the translation you're reading from, it's going to read differently. But I think we're going to get the same idea. And so he says, they're not of the flesh, they're divinely powerful. The first one he says is for the destruction of fortresses. Does anyone have a different word than fortresses there? Yeah, strongholds, a lot of translations say. Anything different? Some even go as far to translate this as arguments, tying it into what we see in verse 5. And so what does he mean that our weapons are divinely powerful for the destruction of fortresses or strongholds? I think there's an element of that. There's similar language used about we have we have this armor from God, and some of those are weapons. I think there's certainly a parallel there. I think here he's talking about more how we're using them than what they are. Yes, Josh?
It says in verse 4, divinely powerful for
Yeah.
That's what the spiritual means of war they're bringing, destroy.
Yeah.
Their war is against the opposition of the divine, the opposition of God, opposition against what's
spiritual. Yeah, so it's against this opposition. It's against these arguments that people are making. It's against these positions that people are taking that's contrary to the truth. And so, yeah, the destruction of fortresses is we're destroying speculations, or you might have casting down arguments, I think the New King James says, or casting down imaginations. Other translations render that. And every lofty thing or every high thing does the ESV say opinion somewhere in verse 5? Do you want to just read verse 5 for us in the ESV? Yeah. And so these weapons that we have, they're tearing down these ideas or these arguments or these opinions of men that are contrary to the knowledge of God. And so that's how they're responding to these things. He's not going to respond in the way that they have. He's not just going to make personal attacks back at them. Or he's not going to say, no, I'm really good at speaking when they say he's not good at speaking. But there's this spiritual side of it. We're tearing down their arguments. We're tearing down these fortresses, these strongholds that they have, these things that are contrary to the knowledge of God. Taking every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. And so, again, we're going to expose and respond to these accusations or these arguments by tearing them down, by destroying their reasoning, by pointing to the truth of the gospel. I think this is, in many ways, descriptive of what Paul did in 1 Corinthians 15. Remember, 1 Corinthians 15, there's some among you that say there's no resurrection of the dead. And what does Paul do? He breaks down that argument. He says, if that's true, then Christ isn't raised and our faith is pointless and all of these things. But it is true, and therefore there's hope, and therefore continue to work in the Lord. So he's going to respond to these things. He's going to destroy these ideas of men. All pointing toward the knowledge of God, toward the obedience of Christ. In verse 6, he says, we are ready to punish all disobedience whenever your obedience is complete. What is Paul saying here? How does this tie in to this discussion that he's having? And so here's what we're ready to do. And really going back to meek when face to face, but bold when absent, he says, I'm ready to punish this disobedience. Paul's going to come and he's going to punish those that need punished. He's going to talk about this later in chapter 13. But again, he had talked about this in chapter 4. He gave them the option of how do I need to come to you? He's giving them the opportunity to be obedient. He's talked about that a number of times in this letter. They've come a long way. They've improved some things. I'm giving you a chance. Whenever your obedience is complete, we're going to come and we're ready to punish all disobedience. He's ready to use the authority that God has given him as an apostle, that he's given to these fellow ministers with him. We're ready to do this. And so I think that's how he responds to these charges, that he's meek when face to face, but bold when absent, that he walks according to the flesh. He proves that that is not how they war. That's not how they walk. And he's ready to be bold.
Michael, we were talking through the first seven chapters on Paul and his integrity. You know, there's a real big change in the tone. And there are 1-7 very gentle with the people who try to provide some arguments and to help them to address this. These things are now really pointed. And he's coming after the accusers in a really strong way.
Tone's different, very pointed here, because he's addressing these things more head on. And again, he also, just the fact he's coming to the end of his letter, that's sent with the purpose of preparing them for when he comes. And so here we certainly see that change. With that, some, I don't want to get too far off, but some speculate that this is maybe a separate letter. Maybe this is the sorrowful letter. I don't think that's the case. It flows with the rest of the letter. I think 1 Corinthians fits the description of that sorrowful letter, but just throw that out there that you might hear that when studying with others. But here's our warfare. It's not according to the flesh. Here's the spiritual warfare. Our weapons are not carnal. They're those that are given to us divinely. Verse 7, again, I mentioned if you read from different translations, things are going to read quite a bit differently, not just in the way that they translate words, but you're going to see statements like this. New American Standard 95 reads this way in verse 7. You are looking at things as they are outwardly. Someone have the King James or New King James? How does just that first sentence read in verse 7? Do you look on things after the outward appearance? New King James, very similar. I think it says, do you look at things as they are outwardly? Sorry to pick on you. How's the ESV?
Look at what is before your eyes.
Look at what is before your eyes. So depending on the translation you're reading from, it might read as an accusation that you're looking at things based on outward appearance. It may read as a question, do you see things as they are outwardly? Or it may be in the form of a command to look at what is before your eyes. Now, again, that might seem contradictory, may seem to be making a different point, but basically all of them render the rest of this roughly the same, and so it fits either way. He says, if anyone is confident in himself that he is Christ, let him consider this again within himself, that just as he is Christ, so also are we. And so some kind of make this as, are you looking at things outwardly as the flesh, or it's written as, look at the evidence, look at what's clearly evident before you. But we tie it with this question. If anyone's confident in himself that he is Christ, let him consider this again within himself, that just as he is Christ, so also are we. And so, Paul's saying, there's those that claim to be of Christ. They have confidence in that. But he's reminding them, he says, we're of Christ also. And so, that was evident before them. There was proof that was given among them. He's going to talk about later in the text. Any thoughts or questions about that? I know I'm probably not explaining these things very thoroughly, but
I think so.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Yeah. If you go beyond just listening to what they say, if you actually look at the facts, you'll see that I'm a servant of Christ. Chapters 1 through 7. That was all demonstrating that. We're going to see it in these chapters, him demonstrating that. But so that's the point. If you really look at the facts, if you really look at these things, you're going to see that Paul is a servant of Christ. Don't just take what these accusers say. Don't just look at things as they do. But if you think you're Christ, consider the fact that so also are we. Did you have a comment? Yeah.
It seems like the rest of the church, who you said kind of already kind of talked about, it's kind of out of the picture. He's really focusing on the accusers. Again, another pointed accusation.
Yeah.
Looking at things out.
Certainly. Certainly. All right, verse 8, for even if I boast somewhat further about our authority, which the Lord gave for building you up and not for destroying you, I will not be put to shame. And so keeping in this same vein, and noting, and I'll note this again later, but there's multiple ways in which Paul uses this word boast. There's a sense in which when he talks about his accusers, they're boasting, they're filled with pride, they're bragging about themselves. And there's a sense in which Paul uses it, and Paul's talking about the idea of defending his apostleship. But either way, if I boast somewhat further about our authority, which, what was the purpose of their authority? Yeah, building up and not for destroying you. Again, one of the kind of implicit accusations against Paul was that he was lording these things over the Corinthians. A couple of times he said, we're not doing that. So I think that fits in here. But anyway, he says, this authority we have, it's for building you up, not for tearing you down. He says, I'll not be put to shame. He said, if I went on further and boasted about this, defended this even further, he says, I'm not going to be put to shame in that. That's the confidence that he has. You're not going to disprove his authority. It's been demonstrated clearly. It's going to culminate later when he says, I've shown among you the signs of an apostle. He performed miracles that was proof of his apostleship. By the way, he's saying here, I'm not going to be put to shame in that. There's these people making accusations, but as I defend my apostleship, it's going to be clear to you that truly I am an apostle of the Lord. Verse 9, I think we see again this sarcasm and irony. He says, for I do not wish to seem as if I would terrify you by my letters. And here is a third charge, this one even more explicit than the others. For they say, what's their accusation in verse 10? His letters are weighty and strong. There's a lot of force behind them. There's a boldness in his letters. He speaks as one having authority. He speaks as one that's powerful and mighty. But what? Yeah, but his appearance doesn't match it. Notice he's not. They don't have proof that he's acting timidly, that he's afraid to stand up for the truth in person. But no, they say his letters are bold, but look at him. He's unimpressive. How'd you like to have that be what someone says about you? He's unimpressive. His speech is contemptible. So he's nothing to look at. His speech isn't great. One of those, this is the accusation they have. We don't really have anything to compare it with. But you might pick up a commentary and there might be 10 or 12 pages about he was bow-legged and his nose was crooked and I mean all kinds of things. We don't see that here. But simply, this is their accusation. His presence is unimpressive. His speech is contemptible. So, verse 9, I don't wish to seem as if I terrify you by my letters. I think he's kind of poking a jab at that because they say he's weighty and strong in his letters. But he says this in verse 11. Let such a person, right, what Rocky was saying, like pointed right back at them, those that make this claim, let such a person consider this, that what we are in word by letters when absent, such persons we are also indeed when present. Does Paul respond and say, no, I'm good looking and I'm eloquent? No, that would be that carnal warfare. That would be arguing according to the flesh. That would be. No, he says, here's the evidence. What we are in word by letters when absent, such persons we are, or such persons also indeed when present. Let's go back a little bit in 2 Corinthians. Why did Paul delay his visit? The accusation was that he was fickle in his plans. He wasn't serious. Didn't care about him. What was his real plan? Or what was his real reason?
To spare them.
He was waiting. Waiting for the response back from that. To spare them. He could have come then, if circumstances permitted it, and just lambasted them because they weren't right. But he says, I did it to spare you because I didn't want to come in that way. Let's go back and look at this. Chapter 1 of 2 Corinthians. Remember, they're talking about his plans and why they had changed. Let's look first at verses 15 to 17. In this confidence, I intended at first to come to you so that you might twice receive a blessing, that is to pass by your way into Macedonia, and again from Macedonia to come to you and by you to be helped into my journey to Judea. Therefore, I was not vacillating, or I did not do it lightly. I did not show fickleness, again, depending on translation. When I intended to do this, was I? Or what I purposed, do I purpose according to the flesh, so that there may be in me yes, yes, and no, no at the same time? He goes on, he talks about God being faithful. There's not yes and no, but it's yes in Christ. 23 and 24. But I call God as witness to my soul. That's how strongly he makes this claim. God's the judge. He says that to spare you, I did not come again to Corinth, not that we lorded over your faith, but are workers with you for your joy, for in your faith you are standing firm. So Paul didn't come to spare them. Do we have instances where Paul was bold in person? Anyone think of an example of when Paul was bold in person? when he called out Peter to his face. Let's look at Galatians. In Galatians chapter 2, another letter where in part Paul's defending himself. He goes back and gives the history of his conversion and being called as an apostle, not relying on the other apostles, just being a follower of them, but he received it from God. He describes what took place in Jerusalem in chapter 2. I'll look at one other example. We'll get to Peter because it's there. But in the first few verses, he talks about after 14 years, went up again to Jerusalem with Barnabas, taking Titus. It was because of a revelation that I went up and submitted to them the gospel which I preach among the Gentiles, but I did so in private to those who are of reputation for fear that I might be running or had run in vain. But not even Titus, who was with me, though he was a Greek, was compelled to be circumcised. But it was because of the false brethren secretly brought in who had sneaked in to spy out our liberty, which we have in Christ Jesus in order to bring us into bondage. But we did not yield in subjection to them even for an hour so that the truth of the gospel would remain with you. There's an example of Paul's boldness. He goes down verses 11 through 14. And here's what was mentioned, that when Cephas came to Antioch, I opposed him to his face because he stood condemned. For prior to coming to the coming of certain men from James, he used to eat with the Gentiles. But when they came, he began to withdraw and hold himself aloof, fearing the party of the circumcision. The rest of the Jews joined him in their hypocrisy, with the result that even Barnabas was carried away by their hypocrisy. But when I saw that they were not straightforward about the truth of the gospel, I said to Cephas in the presence of all, if you being a Jew live like the Gentiles and not like the Jews, how is it that you compel the Gentiles to live like Jews? And so here's examples of Paul being bold in person. Again, not about him having an impressive presence or strong speech, but he was bold. He had this courage. I think about had it with them. Yeah. 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 Certainly, in his letters there, he talked about it. I think about in Acts chapter 13, where with Elymas the magician. So his name's translated, was opposing them, Acts 13, verse 8, seeking to turn the proconsul away from the truth. But Saul, who was also known as Paul, filled with the Holy Spirit, fixed his gaze on him and said, you who are full of all deceit and fraud, you son of the devil, you enemy of all righteousness, will you not cease to make crooked the straight ways of the Lord? Now behold, the hand of the Lord is upon you, and you will be blind and not see the sun for a time. And immediately a mist of darkness fell upon him, and he went about seeking those who would lead him by the hand. Then the proconsul believed when he saw what had happened, being amazed at the teaching of the Lord. So there's other examples. But the point is, Paul had been bold in person before. Their claim wasn't true, that it wasn't just in his letters. And kind of he's giving a challenge to them. Let such a person consider this, that we're ready to come in person exactly as we wrote. And so we would demonstrate that. So even here, we note that they're not directly attacking his message. They have no basis for that. They attack his character. They attack his personal or his physical characteristics. And so we're going to see in this part of the tactics of Satan and those that follow him, that they're sneaky in that way. And I think we see that very often, even today, that same playbook is used by those that seek to discredit those that preach the truth. Is very often they don't make a case against what they're teaching. They begin to make personal attacks that maybe don't have merit. But either way, we see Paul responds to these things. Any other comments about that? Yeah. 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 Especially given his background. And especially what happened immediately after he began preaching the gospel. The Jews wouldn't leave him alone. They persecuted him everywhere he went. He kept preaching the truth. And so even when he came and preached to Corinth, they knew about that. They understood these things. Paul had addressed these things even in this letter. So Paul had proved time and again that he wasn't this timid person in person, that he wasn't afraid to stand for the truth. Anything else? Yes, sir.
I mean, just you read between the lines. Yeah. You can see here, looking at 1 Corinthians 18, when Paul goes, you can see his track record, you know, and then he tells
pay your attention. I was like this before, in your presence, and I want to say this, just remember. So.
Yeah. Anything else? Let's keep going. Verse 12. Again, responding to his accusers. He says, "For we are not bold," verse 12, "to class ourselves." 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 12. "For we are not bold to class ourselves or compare ourselves with some of those who commend themselves. But when they measure themselves by themselves and compare themselves with themselves, they are without understanding." So I said reaping and sowing a lot. Paul says themselves a lot. What's Paul saying here? Can someone simplify that for us?
Puffed up in the chest and they don't realize it.
Yeah, puffed up in the chest, they don't realize it. That, I think, again, he's responding to these accusers. And I think maybe, again, using some of that sarcasm irony, we're not bold, we're not brave to do what they do. But what they do is foolish. He ends the verse. So they, what was their standard by which they judged themselves? Yeah, themselves, each other. That one commented on it this way. They said these enemies had formed a mutual admiration society and used their own accomplishments as the rule of their success. Therefore, they congratulate themselves for having attained their own standard. That's what they're doing. They're not looking to what pleases God. They're comparing themselves by themselves. They're making themselves the standard. Paul says, we're not bold to use that standard. They do this without understanding. He says, but we will not boast beyond measure, but within the measure of the sphere which God apportioned to us a measure to reach even as far as you. So Paul's not using that same kind of logic as them and saying, look how much better of a teacher we are, or look how much this. No, he says, we're boasting in the sphere which God apportioned to us to reach even as far as you. That God was the one that had commissioned them, if you would, use the language he used before, to preach even to Corinth. He continues, he says, for we are not overextending ourselves as if we did not reach to you, for we were the first to come even as far as you in the gospel of Christ. And so, Paul and those with him, they were the ones that had brought the gospel to Corinth. Again, he's not saying, look at us and how great we are. He's just saying, we were the ones that were given this task to bring the gospel even to you. A number of passages throughout 1st and 2nd Corinthians where he talks about this very thing, that we're servants of Christ, we're the ones that brought the gospel to you. He says, not boasting beyond measure, that is, in other men's labors, but with the hope that as your faith grows, we will be within your sphere, or within our sphere rather, enlarged even more by you, so as to preach the gospel even to the regions beyond you, and not to boast in what has been accomplished in the sphere of another. Don't want to go too far in speculating what Paul's saying here, but at least as I read it, given the tone of the rest of the letter, he seems to be accusing the false apostles of doing that very thing. They're boasting in the sphere that God had given to Paul, Silvanus, and Timothy, but Paul says, we're not going to do that. Now, we hope that by preaching to you, by your faith going out, that the sphere will be enlarged so that we can preach the gospel to regions beyond you, but not to boast in what has been accomplished in the sphere of another. He says, we're staying in our lane, to use kind of a modern-day term. But this was the sphere that God had given them to preach even to the Corinthians. Right? Paul is an apostle. He was an apostle specifically commissioned to the Gentiles. And so he brought the gospel there. We can read in Acts about where they brought the gospel to Corinth. They were the ones that brought the truth to them. And so we're not going to boast beyond our sphere. We're going to boast just in the sphere that God has given us. In the work that God has given us to do. But he who boasts, verse 17, am I over time? Okay. We'll pick up with verse 17, but he who boasts is to boast in the Lord. And we'll pick up the pace.